Hello and welcome to the S-Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture subjects, beginning with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I'm Dunning Wynn.
And I am waiting for Kanye West to interrupt me.
I'm Speak.
I'm going to let you finish, but I just like to let you know that...
I'm going to let you finish, but I just want to let you know that the S-Words Podcast is currently doing Spaceman Spiff, the Calvin and Hobbes podcast.
Not a Calvin and Hobbes podcast, a Calvin and Hobbes retrospective, with like a group of people that... may have read it.
I've read it.
We've all read it, right?
Everybody knows we've read it.
All right.
Awesome. No,
let's go with the... Yeah, she just read one strip right
no,
now.
No, she
has read it? Yeah. They had it in Japan?
They had enough of it that she recognized it.
So. Oh, wow. Okay. So let's go through this. What was your first experience reading Calvin and Hobbes? Do you remember how old you were? Who introduced it to you?
I grew up reading the funny papers. So my parents actually subscribed and still subscribe to the San Jose Mercury News. And so, you know, I would immediately go for the funny pages and for the Sporting Green, actually. No, the Sporting Green was the Chronicle. I would just go for the sports section, and read about football. And, so I got introduced to Calvin and Hobbes, I got introduced to The Far Side, Family Circus, all of the classics. And so I don't remember when, it all is just one big, newsprint blur to me.
Yeah, same here. Sunday Funny, mostly. I don't know if they had them on the weekdays, did they?
They did. It was a regular strip.
It was a regular
Sunday
four...
and on the weekdays. Yeah,
it was usually four panels. Sometimes they would he would mess with that a little bit, but usually it was a four panel daily strip and then the big color deluxe Sundays.
I know it also depends on which newspaper, because sometimes the local newspapers just wouldn't have it.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because of the syndication deals, where you had to buy the Sunday funnies and the dailies separately.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, it was definitely Sunday Funnies. My older brother started buying the books as well, the collection books. But it was definitely the Sunday Funnies first.
When I was growing up, around 6 or 7, my mom used to love going to, bookstores, and seeing as I was 6 and 7, then I didn't really know how to read all that well at around that age, I would usually be bored, so I'd, figure out and find the graphic novels of the, or the collections of the Calvin and Hobbes and Garfield and read that. And my mom would, buy them for me because her philosophy was to, if she could get me interested into comics, which is one of the lowest levels of reading, it would, give me incentive to actually learn to read, you know, into
basically as your gateway drug then.
Yes. Okay. That was her,
it's reasonable.
Her thought.
I started on the novel.
You and your gateway drugs.
No, didn't. You started on the newspaper. You just said
no,
so.
No, no, I'm talking about just reading in general.
It's the newspaper. You just said so.
No, I'm not reading in general. Not reading.
He meant reading novels. Yeah.
He started novels and then he picked up comics.
Real stuff, I guess.
Because it's in English.
Well, no, it wasn't that real. They were some pretty trashy novels.
Boxcar Children?
No.
Trashy novels.
Choose Your Own Adventure?
Not
that explains so much.
That kind of trashy.
Milky Thighs?
No.
Oh, man.
Not that kind of trashy. The stuff like throwaway fantasy stuff.
Oh.
That's not nice.
Like pulpy kind of,
Lowest
common denominator Piers Anthony stuff.
That's much less inappropriate.
Actually, Piers Anthony is pretty trashy, to think of it.
Yes, yes it is. What's the color of her panties? Just
that
bit.
Was an entire novel, right?
Yes, it was. That's the title of the novel.
Yes.
Whoa, really?
Yes, it is. And that's when he was toning it down.
That was when he was toning it down.
Who's this guy again?
Piers Anthony.
Piers Anthony.
Yeah, he's a very sexist guy.
I really shouldn't dig myself a deeper hole. Spaceman Spiff.
Are you
dig,
sure you
dig,
don't want to?
Dig.
In the first book, they were talking about if you get a lot of filth, you can get like a fairy out. And that was the main character trying to lose his virginity, if I remember correctly. And
you know what? I'm not going to talk about this.
But you know it!
I actually don't, because I read it when I was 5. But I'm serious about that, too.
But yeah, that's the thing. My experience with Sunday comics, I started picking up funnies and comics during my osmosis years, where I, learned but didn't really remember. So the first memory was when I actually got one of the collections. I'm trying to remember which one it was. If I had to guess, it was probably Revenge of the Babysat, which... Like, that's one that resonates with me right now, at least. So it's probably that.
All right, cool. That's very interesting to me, Danny, because my first experience with Calvin and Hobbes was actually through the graphic novel format. I had read some funnies back in the day, like the Peanuts and Garfield and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then I think it was like third or fourth grade on one of my birthdays, one of the people that came over gave me Revenge of the Baby Tech. That was exactly the same one. And so I read that several times through.
Yeah.
And actually, my mom was like, oh, you know, that thing that you read, there's more than just that. So mm-hmm. That's when I got, I think it was... Was it the authoritative Calvin and Hobbes, the one on the cover where they're
Essential is the major.
So I didn't actually read it in the newspaper until much later. After I got through those two books, I started reading the newspaper and also found out in the library they had all these books. So eventually that's how I read every single one. It was the gateway to like reading all the other remaining Peanuts books they had.
Garfield, libraries.
The other stuff, including the confusing comics that made no sense. Like, you know, I would read every comic on all the pages for the funnies.
So you actually read Rex Morgan. I was actually thinking of that example.
You know, even that young, like reading it every day and trying to follow it made no sense.
Were you lucky enough to have a newspaper that? Well, wait, you probably
I had the San Jose Mercury News.
So they didn't have Spider-Man until way later.
They eventually got Spider-Man.
Really,
I didn't
way
strange
funnies like I still don't understand Prince Valiant.
I don't think Prince Valiant is meant to be understood.
Prince Valiant is another of those serial fantasy adventures. Okay.
Now, this was how I got introduced to Foxtrot, which is still my favorite comic strip of all time. But we'll go into that some other time. This is mostly a Calvin and Hobbes type show. So let's go into one of the more basic things. The thing that's really interesting about Calvin and Hobbes was the layout of the comic was much different from what you do the standard four panel stuff. Sometimes we didn't even have panels. Sometimes there was just a stretched panel and things like that. A lot of panoramas and a lot more kind of difference in the art. A lot you could tell that Bill Watterson, who's the creator of Calvin and Hobbes, he had a lot of different art styles he liked to present. Sometimes something very, very, very kind of, pulpy. Sometimes something very artistic. Sometimes something very comic and sometimes something very incredibly silly. I'm thinking of the story that Calvin and Hobbes wrote one time for his dad to read, called the one about Barney, where it was basically Calvin, and then his father was really mean, so they locked him in the cellar, and he was forced to eat rats.
Yes, that's right.
Was that the one he read because he was tired of reading Hamster Huey and the Gooey Kablooey?
No, this was just this was a regular Sunday color one.
Okay.
Where it was just out of nowhere.
It was a homework assignment. He had to hand that in to his teacher.
Right, I remember it now.
I think I remember the Cubist one the best, like the one where he just moved it all perspective.
Yeah, that was really cool.
But no, like there's also the other stuff, like when he becomes a dinosaur, like that art totally changes.
Yes.
So, and then let's not even forget also with some of these Sunday comics where sometimes the panels were circles.
Yeah.
Or there were panels within panels. Yeah, exactly. And I remember I heard about this, like, was Calvin and Hobbes was the one that really started breaking out of the traditional panel format,
box, box,
right?
box, yeah.
I think it was the most well known.
I think it was Calvin and Hobbes and Bloom County did that.
Oh yeah.
I will say that I'm not sure exactly which book it is. It has a lot of notes that Bill Watterson was like, it has all these panels, and then Bill Watterson, he'll explain, you know, what he did, why he did it, and stuff like that, and how certain newspapers would force the frames, whatever, certain ways. So you could actually have to make it so that it would still work in those newspapers while he still had his creative visions for the people who actually published it, or he could later publish in the books, stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
That's
book.
A really interesting book. It really is.
Yeah.
It doesn't come with the definitive, like, the $100 set, right? It's actually its own separate thing.
Yeah,
so.
It's
its own
separate thing. It's like something about like the Sundays, something like completes.
I remember it's on the front cover. It's an all white one, and then it has Calvin and Hobbes making faces at you.
Yeah. It's a long style specific one for the stuff he made for the newspapers.
Speaking of like the longer books, it's really interesting to me. Also, I've been reading the Calvin and Hobbes, like, the collections rather than most of the time through the newspaper. And those collections always changed in terms of how the book was laid out. Because I remember you'd get the standard black and white ones, which were squares. And then the earlier collections were long rectangles. And then the later collections were these really wide, long rectangles. Like, nothing was very standardized.
Was there a reason for it?
Well, just know that the way that his strips are usually laid out, he just had, like, different ways of presenting things, and eventually that longer format seemed to be the most proper. It was the easiest for, I think, printing a lot of his Sunday stuff. But, I mean, anything about the style and layout that struck you differently? Like, do you remember any of the art that you really liked?
I just remember that his use of color was much different than everybody else's use of color on Sunday Funnies, because the Sunday Funnies was all about... Well, the thing is about the Sunday Funnies is that they were all about, you know, bright colors. You know, like if you look at, say, I'm reaching for it right now.
Remember the one where Calvin, he's using the Tinker Toys, but he pretends he's God forging Earth?
Yeah.
Like that, right? It was all really dark.
Yeah, that's really
it was a very different kind of coloring scheme than everybody else. Like if you look at Dagwood, it's a very simple color scheme, very bright. You know, if you look at, you know, pretty much anything else on the, Sunday Funnies, like
if you look at Spaceman's Biff, I mean, that's like very 70s colors that he used.
And also just, I think it just fit very well with the kind of monsters or like dinosaurs or what other more imaginative things that he was drawing. But then there was also the other thing about Calvin and Hobbes was that, and I find it very weird that we all read Calvin and Hobbes when we were much younger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About, I would say what, middle school, maybe late elementary school.
Elementary school was most of the time when
people got into it.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting about that strip was that the vocabulary in it was a lot more advanced than most comics. I'm not just imagining this. Like, no. Sometimes I wouldn't know some of the words.
Well, I mean, transmogrifier and discombobulator are actually words.
Well, that's the thing. Like,
really?
Well, transmogrify is a word, discombobulate is also a word.
That's the thing. Like, you'd see these words, but you'd also see the context. You know, you don't know what a transmogrifier does? Well, here. It transmogrifies.
But what about when they're in the sled? A lot of the time they talk about philosophy and, like,
they do talk about philosophy. Yeah.
Where, when you read that as a kid, was it just like, oh, this is one of the boring strips? Or
No, it was just...
You still just read it, right?
Yeah, it's like, hey.
Well, also because he added some action to it, that the wagon was going on this entire time, and it, like, he actually made it a question whether or not they were going to hit anything. Sometimes they did. Often they did.
Yeah.
And also, like, he wasn't afraid to just put in a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
And I mean a lot.
Yeah. He didn't draw speech bubbles. It was the first time I noticed someone use just the line, right?
Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't.
Most of the times he actually drew the bubble.
In his black and white ones, he tended not to, just because he had so much white space, so he would just leave the text in the white space. In the Sunday stuff, he would often put in the...
Because he had to color the background.
Yeah. One thing about the comics is that it was compared to every other Sunday comic, it's very action. There's a lot of,
there's always something happening.
Well, there's Hobbes always, you know, tackling down Calvin.
There's always something happening, but there's very often something happening.
Like, compared to all the other ones, there's a lot more.
There's a lot more happening.
There's a lot more happening, a lot more.
But I'm remembering a lot of the ones where he's just sort of like, holding a water balloon and just standing there, you know?
Yeah.
And then nothing happens with the water balloon for a while, and then the last panel, something happens.
Yeah, it's all suspense to an actual action, so.
Yeah.
No, I remember this now because you think about it, whenever Calvin and Hobbes talk, they're always on that wagon, right? Or they're on the sled and something's always happening.
Or they're making something in the sandbox or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you think about Peanuts, it's just Charlie Brown and Linus standing on a bridge, nothing ever like really moves or anything.
Or standing on a wall,
or one of them is playing that piano and he's talking, or Snoopy's on top of his house and the people are talking.
Yeah, I think for me it's like, and I'm sure this is true for a lot.
Even in Prince Valiant, there was a lot of just standing around talking.
Yeah,
I think for me, and I guess it's true for a lot of other people, is that Calvin is more the everyday real kid. I mean, like, you see stuff like Family Circus and stuff like that, and they're all like the very much the 50s version of
the nuclear family children.
Yeah.
Well, and also, that one's pure one-liners too, Family Circus. So you almost never see them in action. The only thing you can ever see, the Family Circus in action for is those strips with the dotted lines of Billy. Yeah.
Yeah, that never appealed to me.
Yeah, I it was also like Dennis the Menace and stuff like that. But those are all, you know, they started a long time ago. Same with Peanuts, that started a long time ago. And so Calvin and Hobbes was this kind of fresh, more real take on the imagination of kids and the way they're portrayed. So that's what I really liked about Calvin and Hobbes.
And I think it really helped that there was all these kind of different characters that Calvin became really explored the different types of imagination that he had. And this kind of goes into the next thing I wanted to go over was that he has Spaceman Spiff, and that's a very, you know, old classic 70s science fiction. Then you have Stupendous Man, which is actually... He doesn't really go into a different world most of the time with that.
Doesn't he just, like, put on briefs?
Yeah,
he just goes to the closet and often
and he puts
stuck.
On a cape, right?
Yeah.
Cape and briefs.
And then he also has one of my favorite characters, which is Tracer Bullitt, whenever he goes into that noir style setting.
Yeah.
I love that. When you're a kid, it's confusing. But when you're an adult, when you're an adult, you appreciate it so much more.
Like, okay. Yeah, you don't understand the genres behind it initially. When you're a kid,
When I was a kid, I saw Dick Tracy.
And they
also had the Dick Tracy comics, too. So
yeah. Oh, we didn't have that.
I had that.
It was on the, what was it? Bazooka Bubblegum?
Bazooka Joe?
The Bazooka Joe, I think, was also one of the comics. Yeah, but the Bazooka Bubblegum also had Dick Tracy comics with it, too. So
really?
That. Yeah.
Oh, I never got any
of those.
I always had the lame
one-liner jokes with Bazooka
Joe comics.
But yeah, that's why I understood Calvin and Hobbes when he went into that little, you know, everything's dark, he's got that hat.
Do you have a very favorite one of the personas, like, or even just when he becomes pretends to be a dinosaur?
Tyrannosaurus Rex, specifically.
The T-Rex?
Yeah. When he's in the jet, Tyrannosaurus Rex in a jet. I mean, how can you not
turn
like
into
that?
A jet flying to the sun? What is it called, the Russians? Like a boss.
Like a boss.
Now you're dead.
Like a boss. No, I mean, I like specifically that one because, you know, it took two cool ideas for me being a kid, and he actually just combined them.
Which is what you do when you're a kid.
And he actually had, like, a storyline for all of it. I mean, it's a very, you know, childlike storyline for everything. Doesn't know where it's actually going. But it was a fun one to go through.
I don't actually have a favorite persona.
What about something like with his imagination, though?
Yeah, the thing is that I liked his imagination in general, so I didn't have a particular favorite persona or favorite like style of fantasy he would go into. I just liked the fact that he had this really grand imagination, you know? So every time one of those things happened, I'd go, yeah, cool. And I didn't really favor any of them over each other.
Speaking of grand imagination where you go, yeah, cool, let me just mention mine. There's a Sunday strip in which he's playing with a toy airplane, a train, and a house. Mm-hmm. And he narrates the entire thing, and he's narrating that the plane is going to crash, that the train is going to derail, and then there's an earthquake coming down the middle of the fault line. And all in the center of it is this little farmer in his house trying to light a match to start his oven. And then it comes out of the whole, like, scenario, and you see Calvin with all the toys, and he looks, he breaks the fourth wall, he looks at you, and he says, "This ought to be good."
And that's the end of it.
I love that. When I was a kid, I was like, "This is so awesome." And now that I think about it, I was like, "Oh, this is horrible."
Everybody loves a train wreck, man. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Basically, the way I view Calvin Hobbes is it's about a kid that desperately needs a lot of therapy.
Yeah,
I always saw him surprisingly well adjusted.
Yeah, that's the thing is that
what
I think therapy would ruin Calvin and Hobbes. Seriously, I don't want that.
Yeah, like one of my favorite things was like. Basically, like, during, like, kind of the real world type things where, like, suddenly the art completely changes to a more realistic style. Like, one that I was thinking of recently was, him and the girl, Susie?
Susie.
Yeah. Yeah. Susie and they're
play doctor.
Yeah,
right?
Not that kind of doctor, They're actually, you know, like
doctor and nurse, right?
Doctor and nurse.
Oh, no, no, this they're
doctor and patient.
Doctor and patient.
Oh, okay.
The one where they're married, the one where they play house is different.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, in this one, it's like, you know, you see the first frame and it's like it's doctor and the patient and the doctor goes like, okay, so what's wrong? And the patient goes like, oh, I think my knee hurts.
Yeah, right?
My knee hurts. He goes, okay, well, I think you need a lobotomy. He goes like, what? He goes, no, that's ridiculous. Like, who's the doctor here? I am. And they start arguing.
Yeah,
and then she like, ends up kicking him in the shins. The whole thing is in this realistic style until the very end. And you just see them like this. When you see like just Calvin and Susie.
They just get fed up with each other, yeah. And Susie usually walks away.
Yeah. I love the panel where it's him as the older doctor and he's like pointing at her. He's like, well, your knee hurts. What kind of stupid thing is that?
Oh, God. Yeah, that's right. Sometimes it wouldn't just be like, Calvin dressed up in certain clothes. Sometimes you would see a full persona, and they would go at each other, and
eventually would degenerate.
Yeah, and sometimes you did like you knew who they were because you knew the comics, but sometimes if that was the first comic you read, you wouldn't understand until the last time. And then you finally understand. Oh, these little kids make so much more sense now.
But, yeah. I love that. I love seeing adults acting like kids.
Well,
With such truth behind how you feel that's what they're doing.
Yeah. One of the things I liked about the storylines for almost all of Calvin is that it always starts out with something, you know, regular. Like something that, you know, you like almost politically correct kind of idea of fantasy or story and whatnot. And then Calvin comes in and he just tosses all that up and he brings in some kind of element. Like in the one, like, song was talking about, like, your knee hurts. Well, let's get you a lobotomy. Or, I'm painting. Well, why don't we take out a saw and just go crazy in this?
Or that
entire, Sunday strip where he spends the entire beginning part, making snowmen. Yeah. And then horribly mangling them and creating reactions to those mangled snowmen. Yeah.
Oh, the tiny ones,
the
right?
The tiny ones.
He's a T-Rex, right?
T-Rex was food. It was mashed potatoes that he did that with.
And what's the one where he pretends all the tiny little snowmen are
going to... No, it's not tiny snowmen. They're actual snowmen.
Yeah, he makes full-size snowmen. Starts with one. And then he, like, mutilates it. And then makes a bunch of other snowmen with shocked expressions on their faces.
I've seen that too.
What's the one where he makes the tiny ones and he's like, rah.
That's the summer edition.
He shapes his food into victims.
Yeah.
So that when he's being the T-Rex, he can pick one up and eat it.
There's
quite a few that are very similar.
He creates little stick figures and he's building them up. He's building them up, building them up. Then you see his, like, he goes into that little hunch, his mouth goes into a little squiggly line, like a Tyrannosaurus Rex kind of mouth, and goes, "Arr!" and starts stomping on them. And I think his mom comes out and says, "Calvin, what are you doing?"
I love when his food comes alive, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's reminiscent of,
that's what happens with the broccoli a lot, right? He has to fight his broccoli.
TV dinner. Where it comes alive in Better Off Dead, was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Better Off Dead.
TV dinner, though.
That's right. She actually
made it. She was just experimenting with food.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, with the pudding that moves, the jello that moves.
Then also thinking about his imagination, a lot of the time we get this theme of the monsters underneath his bed.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I guess, really have to just be him speaking to himself as the monsters.
Yeah.
Imagines what he hears. Is all.
Well, there's a one that was right in here. He was taking a bath, and the bubbles turned into a monster.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Mom, it's gonna get me! Oh, I'm drowning! Oh!" What are you talking about? When his mom comes in and... You know, looks
and there's
around.
Like, there's like almost no more water left in the tub, and it's like all over the floor.
And she just gets pissed at him. It's almost died.
And then what was the killer snowman as well? That was also one of a whole thing about that, like a couple, like 2 weeks worth of comics devoted to that.
The snowman was actually Calvin creating them. It was like the.
It amazed me, his efficiency at making snowmen.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's because we grew up in California, so it's like, they're snowmen?
Dude, that would take like 8 hours to do it.
Well, it even surprised Calvin's parents. They would look out and it would just like, they'd just be stunned. They would just look out at all of them like,
well,
wow.
I mean, like, especially since the snowmen are like twice his size.
Yeah. Three times his size.
He put the head on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was bad. Well, there's also one of my favorite strips of Calvin and Hobbes, one that stays with me. There's at one point, it's one of the snow season. You see Calvin just doing this little line of of snow. And like the parents are out and watching him and wondering what he's doing, commenting to each other and, you know, saying, well, at least he's not making those snowmen and decapitating them. and they're saying, this is at least a lot more peaceful. And then they pan out of the house. And you pan out more and more and more. This is an aerial view. And you see this, like, the lines create this big transverse rex. And in between the two open maw is the house.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to come down and eat the house. And I'm just like, oh, my God. How did he do that? I mean, it's like the imagination or the visual ability to actually do that for a kid. Of course, he's, you know, fancy anyway, but that got opened up my idea of, like, even though something can look small or not make sense when it's viewed up close, you take a step back and it can be something totally different. So.
Yeah. All right, so then let's go into something a bit more with his imagination. You remember a game called Calvin Ball?
Yes.
Calvin Ball.
We always tried playing that, and we always got stopped by the teachers.
Is there there's no real set of rules,
no,
right?
No,
that anyone's ever compiled.
No,
all the different
people make up their own and post them on the internet, but that's really people making
like,
up their own and putting them on the internet.
Was it Futurama that had that
Blurred Ball?
Yeah, Blurred Ball.
But Blurred Ball is actually based on baseball more, and they were just saying, "Hey, baseball's boring. Let's do stupid things to it." And but they still mostly maintain baseball rules in Blurred Ball.
The thing that's interesting is that they have Calvin Ball, but they still play other sports together quite a bit, like baseball,
football.
Yeah, actually, it's really just those two, huh?
Yeah, basically just those two.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes frisbee.
Did they play hockey? I don't remember anymore.
No.
Or did they just use the hockey sticks
in
Calvin Ball somewhere?
Did they? I'm forgetting if they ever tried to skate. I don't think that ever happened.
No, I think they always sled it.
It's always been sled.
They must have tried this.
We'll figure it out later. Don't worry about it.
I'm just remembering one of the times they played baseball. And, like, you just see, like, Calvin run up. He's, like, totally breathless and like, he's out. It's because, we need to put the bases closer together.
Yeah. Yeah, because everything's all abstract.
I think there was another one, similar vein. I'm trying to remember if it was from Calvin and Hobbes, where he's like, okay, we've got to stop using tennis balls for this.
Oh, yeah, like,
he just gets another home run.
I forgot to mention about the one that where he's breathless is they actually see him running. And
you see the amount of terrain that he has to cover in order to get to first base.
He's like, go under the fence and like touch the rock.
He hops a creek, runs over a fence, and goes past a couple of trees. Almost gets to first, and then hops texting up.
And of course, while he's running, you have no idea what he's doing.
Yeah.
So where's he going? Oh.
But then also, with regards to these childhood games, there's always this kind of theme across the series about a lot of things that they just did as children, well, what children do. Yes. So, like, riding on the wagon, the sled, the clubhouse they used to have get rid of slimy girls. Building a lot of the snowmen, the dinosaurs, the noir kind of things, especially when we see him and Susie play together. So... Yeah.
Aliens as well.
Oh, and the aliens, when they went to Mars, correct?
Yeah, a little goopy little thing, the eyeball or something.
But then we have all of those, but one of the main themes was the inventions, and we were just talking about this briefly. The transmogrifier, the time machine, the duplicator.
Duplicator. That was awesome.
But which of those do you remember the best? What's the one that you
Well,
really
the one that I remember the most is... because of, it was the title of the collection, Scientific Progress Goes Boink. I believe that was the transmogrifier, wasn't it?
That's a duplicator.
That was the duplicator that did that? They both look the same because they're upside down cardboard box.
Yeah, I think that was actually part of the sequence.
Duplicator is sideways. The transmogrifier is the open end on the floor.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a specific sequence to it. You turn the box into a different configuration, write something else on it, and it was a different machine.
Yeah, right. If you turn it upside down, it covers you. It turns into a time machine.
Yeah, I believe Hobbs actually comments on that, and he goes, like, isn't that the same box?
Scientific Progress goes boink. Holds most a lot of the inventions in it, right? Transmogrifier and the duplicator.
Yeah, it was a long running.
There was also the duplicator that made the good version of him.
Yes. Oh right, that's right.
But he eventually fought. Which, when I try to think about it in real terms,
don't.
How does that
don't.
Work?
Just don't. That's like, the thing.
Like my person, this you is don't the, talk about Fight Club.
Well, no. This is.
Have you actually read that paper? About how
I got it here. I was actually going to talk about it. But it's like actually one of my favorite scenes ever.
You might want to check out Google for this, but there is an entire paper about how Fight Club is actually just an adaptation of Calvin and Hobbes. Yeah,
specifically, they never mention the main character's name. So they just assume the main character's name is Calvin. And they just run with it from there and how Tyler. Tyler. That's why I named it that. Why Tyler Durden is actually Hobbes. And like, and you know, his, and the manifestation of his, yeah, like the manifestation of his own, suppressed urges. So.
I remember because there's all these scenes too, like when Tyler's in the bathtub and then he's talking to the narrator, I guess Edward Norton's narrator, and things like that too. Whoa, we totally went off here, but the inventions.
Well, no, I was going to say
the transmogrifier gun too.
Yeah, but here's the thing I was going to say to John is that. When you start thinking about this and trying to think about how it's real, that's when you realize that you've lost your innocence. Because when we were younger, we were like, oh, that's cool. And then when you get older, when you start thinking about it, you go, oh, that's not possible. And then you think about it further and go, oh, God, did I just say that?
I didn't say it was not possible.
Well, no, I'm just saying that. It's like when you, it's kind of like those moments when you realize, you go, oh, Santa's just a guy in a suit.
Spoiler.
Whoa, yeah. What?
There's a lot of, you know, discussions about whether or not Hobbes is real or not.
And the thing is that,
blah,
you know,
blah, blah,
the,
stuff like that.
You know, there's a lot of talk about how he's real or how he's just a figment of, you know, Calvin's imagination. And the thing is that both of those are out there, as Bill Watterson put it, to a paper. And so I just choose to go, it's either. But that's because I'm an English major and I look at things from every possible perspective. Like, how Moby Dick is both a whale and God and man and, anyway.
What?
And just a whale.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
What other inventions do you guys have?
My personal favorite is actually the time machine.
All right.
Because I liked the idea of him meeting himself from, I'm trying to remember if he went to
the homework, right?
Yeah, trying to get his homework done. And it was like, is that done yet? What are you talking about?
Because back then I went in forward in time to get it from you.
And that was my first introduction to, you know, time paradoxes.
There I guess that the one where he tried to duplicate himself to and try to make his duplicate do the homework and his duplicate didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I like the duplicate story, duplicate machine because of everything that the when he made duplicates, it still affected reality. Like, there was multiples of him, and everything before that, even when I was a kid, I assumed, you know, this is fantasy, you know, and so forth. But when it came to the duplicator, it's like, wait, these activities are actually still getting done. What's going on? this is, you know, it went beyond the bounds of just imagination. It was actually magical at that point.
Which is okay. So,
well, a lot of it is kind of magical in that, I mean, Hobbes does a lot of stuff and that Calvin just couldn't have possibly done.
Hobbes picks up objects and puts them higher than his head.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but Hobbes also, I mean, Calvin also makes those, you know, snowmen.
Yes.
Yeah, but like, Hobbes tied Calvin to the chair. No way Calvin can do that.
That's true. There was a bit of a lot of stuff that you just look at and like, doesn't make you raise an eyebrow about it, even when I was a kid.
So the thing that's interesting about Calvin and Hobbes is his creator, Bill Watterson, really kind of, the easiest way to describe him is he's a hermit. He doesn't really want to go out there too much. He likes writing. He wrote the strip. He liked doing it. He's done doing it. And there's never really been a push for anything beyond the existence of the books, which is actually quite commendable. Given what, like, Garfield has kind of...
Merch.
Yes. So there is no merchandise, there is no animation, although there was a talk at one point between Watterson and a smaller animation studio about doing something, And then Watterson said, can you imagine what it would sound like if Calvin talked? No one wants to hear that. So that's why they never...
That's a good call.
That was his excuse as to why there was no animation for that. And that's the thing, when I think about it, there's a lot of crazy stuff that Hollywood's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one day, the rights to Calvin and Hobbes are going to kind of fall out of Watterson's control because, you know, God help me, you know, 20 years from now, we may not have Watterson around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think about if Hollywood decided to muck around with Calvin and Hobbes?
Same thing I think about whenever they muck around with anything else. Who's doing it? Are they doing a good job? They do a great job. All right, that's awesome. They do a poor job. Well, then that sucks.
But I mean, given Hollywood's track record with Sunday comics, they haven't really done a good job with any of them.
What, you didn't like the Dilbert cartoon?
Oh, I love the Dilbert
cartoon. The Dilbert cartoon's fine, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I like
I'm talking about, like, movies, not
necessarily. Garfield movies?
Well, the Garfield TV series was fine. I like that.
Go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, don't. Don't.
Actually, yeah, don't. If
there's like,
if
you don't like normal, one.
But I'm on that boat too. Where it's like, I don't want anyone to touch it. It's one of those properties. I really think, just don't. You can't do it right. No one can.
There's nothing that you can add to it by making it into a movie.
Exactly. Yeah,
except dollars.
As we were talking about, like, the whole, what made the comic great was that Bill Watterson played with the way the comic was presented, and that just can translate into a movie. Like, a lot of his jokes were based off of the fact that it was printed.
Yeah, that final strip.
Yeah.
Or because strip, final panel.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if you can do a long-running story with Calvin Knopf. I'm surprised you can do that with actually any kind of short stream comic, because there's just, where do you get the content?
Well, that's the thing, the Japanese keep trying it, and it almost never works.
Yeah.
Did with Azumanga Daioh. Yeah. That's pretty much the only one that did it, though.
Yeah.
Well, with Calvin Hobbes, you actually did have, like, sometimes he would do these long-running stories. Yeah. It would be, like, strip by strip, and then there'd be jokes per strip, but then, like, if you actually look at it all, like, for, like, a full chapter, it's actually one story.
As we realize when we actually go through the things like Revenge of the Babysat and Scientific Progress Goes Boink.
Yeah, there's stories to it, but it's more, I don't know, they've already set up the setting and the characters before they go into this whole big story. So if you're going to do a movie, you've got to do all the setup before all that. The whole transition from reality to fantasy in an immediate kind of sense. You'd also have to deal with, they do thought bubbles in that, right?
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes.
Well, they usually just talks out loud. Yeah. Or talks to Hobbes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's less of an issue. Yeah. Because I've...
Come to think of it.
I don't remember any thought bubbles right now.
I don't really remember any thought bubbles.
Okay. Come to think of it, the more I try to picture what a Calvin and Hobbes movie would look like, the more I hear, are you ready, Talking Pike?
I was born ready, Kaneda!
Yeah, so I really, really hope they don't.
What the hell was that?
American Akira.
You've never seen that video? I'll show it to you later on. Don't worry about it.
The American Akira, and that's just about the same thing as Saturday Morning Watchmen.
John likes that a lot. He wishes it was real.
Yeah, you would watch Saturday Morning Watchmen, right?
You know what he's going to say?
What?
I'll tell you what he's going to say.
What is he going to say?
I'm speak.
What? Neko Mimi Modu.
Don't make me snap you know that
range. Now let's go into this though. I asked you guys all to come with your three favorite moments in the comic strip. But before that, let's talk about the final strip. Which, you know, when I was a kid and I read that final strip, because everyone's sort of like, you know, it's ending.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed. But now as an adult, I really appreciate it more and more. I think it's just the right way to send off the comic strip, and I was especially glad that he went with the sled rather than the
wagon.
And the point being because that final panel is very white, and it's
That's a very clean
slate. And actually, I think it's the comic actually that strip actually talks about the fact that it snowed, right?
Yeah.
And it's a clean slate.
They're
on the sled, and I love seeing that small bit at the very end of them going down the hill. It's just sort of it's more personal. When that picture is smaller than some really large, kind of grandiose ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that it kind of ties up everything you need to know about the strip and the characters without being very to the point, this is really what happened at the end.
Yeah.
Like, you sort of already know where Calvin is headed with his life.
Therapy?
I'm kidding.
He's a healthy grown boy.
He is.
With its own little problems, same kind that I had. He lives in fantasy land. Biggest problem that he has is that he's very lonely.
Anyway. Thanks, John. Now I'm sad.
Let's go into your three favorite moments in the comic strip. If you have any honorable mentions, go ahead and mention them right now. I actually have a couple, but go ahead and whichever ones that didn't make your list. All right,
my honorable mention is you just see Calvin and Hobbes standing around, and they're both wearing these dark sunglasses. And Hobbs goes like, so, are you supposed to be able to see in these? Because I can't see a thing. Or something to that effect. And Calvin goes like, well, what's the point? We're just standing around.
Oh, yeah, we can't see anything. When we run into stuff, I think we're just supposed to stand around.
I'm thinking of the chocolate frosted sugar bomb stuff. Whenever, like, Hobbs even touches the chocolate frosted sugar bombs, it's like he's been hit by lightning. Oh, he just, like, grabs his throat and, like, his fur stands on end and stuff like that. It's like, you should look, it turns the milk bright brown.
Chocolate-covered sugar bombs with sugar on top.
Chocolate-frosted sugar bombs. Oh, yeah, you pour sugar on them, right?
Yeah.
Part of your complete breakfast.
It's the best.
Picture.
What was it? It was like, you know that shaking feeling? You know what that is, I bet? Vitamin deficiency.
Oh, yeah, and this is what one of the first strips I actually remember reading, which was, you know, they're all at the whole family's at the dinner table, and, you know, and the mother puts the plate down in front of him, and he goes like, so what is it? And the dad goes, oh, it's like snakes, it's this, like, all this gross stuff.
Oh, it'll make you into a mutant,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, make you mutant. And she's like, down, like really, really, like, just messily and stuff like that. And the mother goes, like, you know, you really have to think of it in a different way. Making me this food.
I love the little add-on to the joke there. When he's, like, feeling his arm, and he goes, I can feel it working. John, Danny, anything from you guys?
I already gave you my
that's pretty much covered.
Okay.
I talked about the machine.
I got one I really like, which is Calvin has to go to the bathroom, but he's afraid of going off the bed because he's afraid the monster's going to get him. And so Calvin's like, what's the solution, Hobbs? And then the last panel is the parents looking at the roses outside of his window. And they're like, the flowers on this side of the house just don't do very well.
That's what I like about it. The jokes are, like, the crude jokes were very subtle.
Here's another one. It was Calvin Hobbs in the tent, and Calvin, like, and he's like, it's like he only sees the tent, and Calvin says, so Hobbs, do you believe in ghosts?
And then the next is them, like, totally away. Like, I think Hobbs is holding the baseball.
Something rising.
Okay, hell.
Should we start with our top three?
Yeah, go with your number three, please.
Okay, so my number three is when Calvin's dad is explaining to him how they know the weight limit of bridges. Because,
please explain.
So,
how?
So it's like, so dad, how do they know the weight limit of these things? Well, you see, son, they start with a 1-ton truck and drive it over. Then they go with a 2-ton truck. And then a 3-ton truck. And then when it breaks, they go back to the last truck and rebuild the bridge, and that's how they know what's there.
God, I forgot how dumb that his dad was.
His dad was awesome.
His dad just was a dick.
His dad was a great liar. That's great.
And I'll give a spoiler out that has something to do with my number one, so.
All right.
Yeah, actually, mine too, because I think that's why we've avoided talking about the dad.
Or the parents at all.
I'm sure all of us have something involving the parents, and probably the dad, because the dad is awesome.
Hey, all three of mine involve the parents.
Nice!
Son?
You're
number three.
Okay, my number three is, we've been talking about a lot, but the Snowman House of Horrors. it's just like that. The ones where, like, that kid really needs some therapy.
Oh, like the ones where he builds, like, the snow cannon, and it's, like, gone through the guy's chest.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also the one where he has the snowman that's been hit by the car in the garage.
Oh,
and all the other snowmen are gathered around it.
That's what it was.
There's one where, like, it's just like a whole horror scene, and, like, one of them is, like, it's like a sled bisecting a snowman.
There was quite a few.
And like the worst one I saw was like he built all these little snowmen like on the ground, and he went up to his treehouse, and he had this one snowman in his hand going like and saying like just basically narrating and he's saying like and the crowd like tempted him to jump to jump like that. Oh, like, damn. Or no, like the crowd cheered him on yes. The jump.
I remember also the one where like I think the final panel, it's all the crazy snowmen that are already dead and stuff. Yeah. And then his parents come out to him, and he's got one on a chair with a noose around him.
Oh, underneath the tree.
Just starting to pack it, and the parents are like, I think you should
I think that's enough, Calvin. he's gone so far that he's actually freaked out to his mom and dad. They're just quietly like, calm down. Because usually they just yell at him when he does some crazy stuff like this. But this time they're like, come inside. Please stop.
What about you, John? You're number three.
Oh, man. Like the biggest problem I have with rating 1, 2, 3 for Calvin Hobbes is that when I read them, I thought they're all great. And I don't really have a specific...
Choose your children! You love three of them more than the others, John.
Yeah, just pick one at random then.
I didn't even name them. I just love them that much.
Yeah, that's love.
You have to pick their own names. Is that why you have a baby named Goo and one named Ga?
I do it the Calvin and Hobbes way.
Goo too.
I do like the when the Calvin was going against the the whole Gross thing. You know, the
when he formed Gross.
Well, when he formed it, whenever he goes into his
didn't Susie
world
actually get
that.
Into Gross at one point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hobbes let her in, right? Yeah. After she kisses him or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, that was like a more dirt adult version when it gets on a little bit further. But there is always like this big like conspiracy about the girls against him, if I remember correctly, and he's got to work against that. I remember liking that because I was like the same age of when I thought girls were of the same kind of like, yeah, we gotta take them out. They're after us. They're gross.
They're all after us.
Gotta get like a cootie shot.
Yeah, my number three is probably, it's not a specific strip, but it was the moment I actually understood Calvin Ball. And went, these rules don't make any sense. These rules don't make any sense.
Soylent Green is people! It's people!
And to this...
Spoiler.
And to this day, I have not bothered to learn the rules for cricket, because I just assume that's how Calvin Ball works.
That was a wicked googly. A wicked Chinaman googly. That's actually a cricket term, is Chinaman googly.
What?
Yeah.
Yes. Hey, Britain.
All right. Well, my number three, this is... All three of mine are arcs of the comic strip. So my number three is when he sent in the UPCs for the chocolate frosted sugar bombs to get
took my,
the beanie.
You with took
the,
my number the, one.
The propeller beanie.
That thing was awesome.
I won't say any more. I'll let you talk about it later on. But that was a great story. It's got highs and lows.
Yeah,
and
it was.
My number two is when, right after it rains, Calvin and Hobbes are by a puddle, and he's looking at his reflection, and he's all like, you ever wonder if there's actually another person on that other side of that reflection? And Hobbes goes, maybe you're his reflection. If he walks away, you go away. And then it just shows him at night, staring down and looking worried.
That one was awesome.
Existentialism. Existentialism.
I heard ex-deliciousness.
Ex-deliciousness.
John is drinking.
Usually that makes his diction better, though.
So my number two is a little bit hard to explain. It's basically, it's a lot of panel strips, but it's a day in the life of Calvin. And so, like, it starts off where, like, his mother forces him out of bed. And he's like, and then, like, I think he, like, misses the bus and something like that. And he has, like, his teacher yells at him. The bully bullies him, takes his money. And then when he gets home, he gets tackled by Hobbes. And then, like, his mom tells him to do the homework. His mom tells him to stop, playing with toys. He has to take a bath. And at the end, like, his, like, you know, when he gets tucked in at night and his mother goes, like, you know, I get some rest because, you know, it's going to be, like, another great day tomorrow. He just sighs.
Yeah.
Very peanuts.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. Yeah, that one has like so little. It's all mostly pictures.
Yeah, just
events.
Which is why I really like that. It's just like all visual.
Yeah, you'll notice that mine are all very wordy.
Oh, that was the thing. The bully had a different font.
Yes, he did have a different font.
That was like one of the first times I saw that, and I was like, "Wow, that's kind of cool." It makes sense because that's how bullies talk.
I guess my number two actually with the school. And it usually has to do with the school papers that have to be done by Calvin and brought in. And usually the parents get called in to go over it. One of them is the his dad has Calvin to eat. Like what's a day like with his dad? And I guess he writes down that his dad forces him to eat rats. and there's multiples of these stories, and it's just like it always like the teacher there that really got me is like she's so nice, you know, she's
a little old lady.
Well, no, she's not little at all. She's freaking huge. Yeah, and she's got those white hair, and she's just like an old teacher would be this size.
That's true.
All right, Calvin. I'm gonna have to call your parents again. Sit down. Next. You know, she's not like all the other teachers. That whole thought of like if you do something bad, they'll really reprimand you or be really mean about it. She was one of the few instances of a teacher being actually reasonably nice to
a problem student.
To a problem student, yeah.
My number two is actually another one of those scenes with the dad and Calvin sitting on the porch, and it's the dad explaining to Calvin why old pictures were in black and white, and why television was in black and white and only turned into color in the 70s. And the dad's explanation is that the entire world was black and white up until 1970 something.
When they invented color.
When they invented color and put it on the whole world. At which point, Calvin asks, but what about paintings? Well, they changed to color when the world changed to color.
No, it was because painters were insane.
Oh yeah, it's because painters were insane. When they changed it over, they turned into color. He's explaining, why old photographs were also in black and white. It's because it's a black and white photo of it's a color picture of a black and white world. And that's one of those things that just sort of blew my mind away when I was trying to put my mind around. It's like, that actually makes sense. What the hell?
That makes no sense.
Makes enough sense to a 6-year-old. That's why his dad was awesome.
Yeah, his dad was awesome.
My number two is, well, actually, my next two are actually very serious. My number two, though, is less serious. It's when the family goes off to somebody's wedding and Calvin forgets to bring Hobbs. And when they come back, the house is broken into.
Oh, yeah.
And Calvin kind of freaks out looking for Hobbs. I remember there was that one strip that was really, it really got me, was that he's looking for Hobbs, and he says, my mom said that you should still be around because, you don't mean anything to anyone. And then he says, well, you certainly mean something to me. I remember that strip. I really liked that. I got it when I was a kid, too. I understood what was going on. And a lot of that kind of story involves the parents
more. Yeah, there's actually, I'm trying to remember the entire scene
where they say, "This you always expect this to happen to someone else, except that to someone else, we are the someone else."
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed, especially that last strip with them looking at the broken glass on the floor. Mm-hmm. I thought that whole storyline was very well executed. Yeah. So, sorry for the downer.
I just remember
here to bring us an upper.
That's the thing. The other part of that is, I remember another scene from that where, the parents are trying to go to sleep, realizing that their home is broken into. And the mom's basically saying, well, I'll feel safe. You're here. Because you're here. And the dad's actually the one who says, well, who's going to do that for me then?
Yes. So my number one, once again, the dad.
Isn't he awesome?
It's when Calvin asks about sunsets.
Oh, yeah.
And the dad's like, oh, yeah. That's the sky catching fire when the sun's going down. Where does it go when it sets? Arizona. That's why the rocks are red. He fills Calvin's head with crap, and it's so awesome.
Yeah,
like I said, Calvin's well adjusted. He assumed his environment.
It may have been a part of that, but the dad was like, this, and the sun is about the size of a quarter. See if you put your quarter up next to the sun, it's about the same size. And Calvin goes like, "What? I heard in school that the sun's supposed to be really, really big."
I just brought up the strip online, and there's a great one that actually ends with, "I hope someday I'm as smart as Dad is." It's all goes, wait, what did he tell you?
So, what, are you number one now?
You're number one.
Alright, so my number one is another word of wisdom from his dad. And so,
told you.
And so Calvin asks his dad, "Where do babies come from?"
Yes.
And his dad goes, "Well, most people go to Sears and buy the kit." And then it comes with instructions and you just build it and you're done. And Calvin goes, "What, I'm from Sears?" He goes, "No, you're actually Blue Light Special at Kmart." It's a lot cheaper and almost as good. Oh. And Calvin screams. And then when you hear the mom go, like, "What are you telling me now?"
That's like the worst dad. I'm just getting that now. How bad of a dad
this guy dad was. Awesome. I don't know what you're talking
That's
about.
That's a horrible dad. Oh my god.
I've already gone over my number one. It was the when he's building that line of snow and it turns into
it's
that
dinosaur
head, face. Basically opened my mind to visual representation.
World.
I already went over it, so you don't need to go over it again.
But yeah, as I was mentioned before, my number one is when Calvin goes and gets the mail order beanie. And I remember as soon as he turns in he sends it out in the mail. And he just spends the next couple of strips imagining what it's going to be like. And he's got a beanie on his head and he's flying around everywhere. And you know, he gets to see the world from the plains heights, and he's just imagining how awesome it's going to be.
Well, also remember that it's awesome because he eats like 20 boxes of the chocolate frosted sugar bombs
in a day,
and he just has this insane high.
And what Sung, when you were talking about that strip where it's like his whole day, what it reminded me of was actually a strip in this storyline where he goes through school, everything sucks, and then he can always think about his beanie. So when he comes home, his mom's like, "So how was your day?" "It was a blast. Did my beanie come in?"
And the thing is, you know, he's sitting there every day waiting for the mail to come in, waiting for the mail, you know, asking if the mail's here. The mail finally gets here, and he gets his box, and he cracks it open, puts it on.
Yeah.
And it just sort of spins, and he feels like a dork.
No, you're forgetting the best part about that storyline it says some assembly required, and he gets in a fight with Hobbs because Hobbs tries to build it, and he breaks something.
Is that what happened in that one?
Yes,
I'm trying to remember that.
Hobbs is supposed to he's like, "Well, let me try it." And then Calvin's like, "No." And then he, like, moves the wires away from Hobbs, and then you hear a snap, and Calvin freaks out. And he actually gets mad at Hobbs during the storyline, and then later on his father comes in and just, like, glues the little battery case back together, and he puts it together. And then the final result, you remember how the final part of the strip works, right?
Go ahead.
It's brilliant in that they hate the beanie, but then they say, "But it came in this awesome cardboard box."
Yeah, that leads into
it, you know, him and Hobbs are cool again. And what I really like about the story is that it's how guys, like, handle their fights with each other.
It's how guys handle drama.
Yeah,
change the subject.
They get mad at each other for a while, then the next time they see each other, they're just like, "Hey, man, you want to do something again?" "Yeah, sure." And then it's over. Then
it's like, "Hey, it's football season again."
Yeah, and it was like the first time I really saw this kind of situation before it ever happened to me in real life, and I realized this is the prime example of how men handle arguments.
But yeah, like, the whole thing about me was, when I was seeing it, when I was doing it, I actually still have this habit. And I get home, if I'm expecting something in the mail, I'm frantically looking around, and I have to tamp it down. And, you know, sometimes when that happens, I remember the Calvin and Hobbes thing, it's like, okay, fine. It might just be a spinny beanie. I'm just gonna have to accept it. Because, you know, whenever something's coming in the mail, I otherwise would just get really panicky about it.
Have you ever done mail order stuff through, like, those UPCs, like on the cereal box or anything?
Not specifically the cereal box.
Has anyone here done one?
I've done, like, random mail order catalogs
when
I was a kid, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I might
have. We never actually gathered enough Bazooka Joe comics.
Okay, so I got one for you, which was Fruit Loops was offering a Star Wars toy.
Yeah.
That it was Han Solo in Stormtrooper gear. And the coolest thing about it was that it was still this basic Stormtrooper figurine, except Well, you also had Han Solo's head, and you put the helmet on top of it. But mm-hmm. one of the arms was bent inward. So if you put the blaster rifle in there and you lifted the other arm, it looked like he's actually holding it with both hands.
Right.
That got me excited. Just letting you know. And Fruit Loops had it, and you had to mail in two UPCs, no check or money order. You just had to mail it with the completed form. So it was basically a free toy, right? Yeah. Allow 8 to 12 weeks for delivery.
Yeah, that's right.
When your boy is obsessed with Star Wars.
That's an eternity
in middle school. You come home every day hoping to see it, and it just, like, at the 4-week point, you think maybe there's a chance
that
they just sped up, you know? At the 8-week point, you're like, okay, it's gonna show up.
Any day now.
By the 12th week, you don't care anymore, and it shows up, and you're so happy.
Yeah.
Generally, I forget that.
But yeah, that
actually, I remember those experiences for me. It's like by the time it came, and like, why did I even want this?
Yeah,
that's the thing. Like the object in the mail, the object in the parcel itself will never be as good as the 8 weeks of imagining how awesome it's going to be.
Yeah, the helmet. Could yellow really easily if it was exposed to light. So you'd see like a yellow helmeted stormtrooper in like totally like white armored body. Anyways, my final number one is all we had missed talking about the mom. So this is an honorable mention. I forgot. There's a Sunday strip in which Calvin is sick. Actually, the whole week before that Sunday strip, Calvin was sick.
Yeah.
His mom had to take care of him. And she gets up out of the bed. And she's like, oh god, please, Calvin's yelling, this is actually the start of that story. Calvin's yelling, and he's like, mom, I feel sick, and then she's like, oh, what is it this time? She gets out of the bed, and she's like, Lord, help, give me a sign if he's actually sick, that kid better be sick, mm-hmm. and then you hear, and she's like, I'm sorry! But actually, Calvin's mom actually takes care of him a lot of times, and this actually leads into my favorite story in Calvin and Hobbes, which involves a raccoon, if you remember this one. Which Calvin and Hobbes find an old raccoon that's basically hurt and off by the creek. So he gets his mom to go help, and they put him in like a shoebox, and they try to like take care of him and kind of like give him a nice place to stay and kind of nurse him back to health, and hopefully, you know, they can release him back in the wild. Of course, at this point, the parents already know that the raccoon's going to die, and this is kind of like a story about
mortality.
You know, it's a mortality story for Calvin, and the whole thing is pretty much not funny. It's just very easy to relate to and more dramatic. Mm-hmm. And what I really liked about this one is that it doesn't have any humor. And it's very good at making you still feel entertained because you're concerned about what these characters think about the situation that's going on with them. And it's still something that's very relatable to something that you might actually see in your real life. And it's really the strength of the comic strip that it can do anything it wants, and it'll still feel great to you.
Yeah, like, that just reminded me of the book Yukon Ho, where Calvin decides to walk to Alaska without realizing how far it actually is.
His mom just comes and gets him. It's like, get out of the tree, Calvin. Let's go home. I remember when he makes the sandwiches.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not doing anything weird, Mom. Just making some sandwiches. I'm really hungry. So actually, this wraps up the show. Any final thoughts about what Calvin and Hobbes really means to you? Like, is it a significant portion of your childhood?
It is a significant portion of my childhood. And it's one of the things in your childhood you can actually go back and say, wow, this isn't embarrassing. It was incredibly intelligent for children. Yes. Like I said, you know that puddle thing that I mentioned? John brought up existentialism. How many kids learn about that? Other than me.
Other than through things like Calvin and Hobbes.
Exactly. Yes.
I also learned about how the sun shrinks.
There's also solipsism in there. Like, there's a lot of them where just Calvin's the only person, and, you know, he questions whether other people are there, actually there. And you question whether the people are actually there because of Hobbes, you know?
I'll just say that one of the early ones I read maybe made me appreciate grown-ups more, which was the babysitter Rosalind. Just the crap that she had to go through.
Yes. Where she gets tackled by a stupendous man.
Babysitting Calvin made me appreciate you know, what parents, like, what grown-ups have to go through in order to, you know, take care of these little kids.
Well, for me, I was just thinking about it. When I was a kid, so much now, but for at the time, I had looked up to the whole, you know, to Calvin himself, the whole way that he could actually imagine all that. I don't know, his free will to do all of that. It must have been for a very short time, and it must have not been something too conscious. But I do remember, actually, that's when I began to just, you know, daydream a lot and just do essentially the same thing that Calvin was doing, just not with an imaginary friend. Other than it breaking me into the whole literature world and into the library as well, good all around.
I'd just like to take another opportunity to, if you haven't had a chance, be sure to check out that that paper comparing Fight Club to Calvin and Hobbes, because it's really, really thorough.
Well, I like to say, I grew up with Calvin and Hobbes. It's one of the few series of books that I've always read and treasured, and I still have a lot of my older ones still at home. They're still wherever I usually used to keep them, either just on, like, the dining room table or, you know, next to the kitchen or wherever I used to read them when I was a kid. And, you know, it's one of those things that I really appreciate so much that we still have it in a very well-collected book form that a lot of people can get access to. And if you haven't read Calvin and Hobbes, or you haven't read all of it, I really suggest that you do. It's very worthwhile, and there's a lot of really great stories in there. I don't really think of any other comic strip as being so almost essential that everyone should read something from, in that it's the closest we can get to literature for a comic strip, at least a Sunday funny kind of thing, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many different things that he's working with, and he paints like a whole different world.
He covers,
like,
a lot of really deep concepts, and yeah, I can still picture some of those scenes where he's running, like where they're just running across a creek in the middle of a forest, and it's just that iconic.
I mean. Yeah, and it goes back to kind of what I was saying before, which is that unlike the other funnies, which is all about this imaginary world and trying to make jokes. Calvin and Hobbes really, like, even though it's full of fantasy, it's really based off of
reality.
Off of reality and what a kid would actually go through and how he uses his imagination as kind of escapism.
In a very big way.
Yeah.
He escapes from good stuff with his imagination too, so.
Alright, that pretty much wraps up our episode on Calvin and Hobbes. Do you have any of your own favorite Calvin and Hobbes moments, anything that we may have forgotten that you want us to briefly go over in the mailbag? You can always email us at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. There's also the website where you can find all of our older episodes and check out the upcoming schedule at www.s-words-podcast.com. And where can you find a very, very steady supply of chocolate frosted sugar bombs?
My pants.
www.twitter.com/s_words.
Which actually kind of is in my pants because it's on my phone.
They're nice and salty.
No, they're chocolate frosted.
They're sugar bombs frosted.
Sometimes you can add more sugar to them.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
It has all the essential vitamins, as long as you eat a dozen grapefruits and a couple bran muffins. All right, that wraps up this episode.
Any cardboard box.
We'll see you guys again next week. Recording again. My mic's working, so that's really all that matters here.
That's right. All right. Boink.
Boink. Boink. Boink. Boink.
I like to see the green lights.
Boink.
You like seeing the green lights?
Woo!
I like seeing the green lights. Boink, boink,
yeah!
Boink, boink.
Yeah! Only two.
Sorry, man.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, that doesn't have any green lights at all.
Be like maxed.
Ooh. Ooh.
There you go. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. Yamani.
And there's our opening.
Yamani, Yamani, Yamani.
I don't know. God. I think it sounds a lot weirder when it's only men.
A little bit.
Yeah, I wonder what this sounds like.